Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, our big Bucks Browns preview, First Energy Stadium, 1 o'clock on Sunday, Tom Brady's probably final game in Cleveland. We've got Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times coming up. He will give us a Bucks preview. Lance Reisland's Bucks scouting report coming up as well. You'll hear our prop bets, you'll hear our picks. That's all coming up at the tail end of this pod. But first, as we always do, it's Mary Kay Cabot. It's Ashley Bastock. We are going to give you three things you need to know for this game. Mary Kay, why don't you lead us off?
You know, I just can't help but, you know, think about Tom Brady coming in here for what we've talked about will probably be the last time Browns fans can see him play here in Cleveland. He's starting to heat up with some of his guys. And, you know, he's got some pretty big name receivers over there. In Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Julio Jones. I mean, those are some all-stars on that offense. And he's starting to find them a little bit. He's back in his element somewhat. We know he's not taking sacks. We know he's not throwing interceptions. And so I think that's the thing to watch. The Browns are going to try to hope that they can get Greg Newsom back, but they're not sure they will have him back. So therefore, they will be a little bit shorthanded at cornerback against some of these, you know, good, big, fast receivers. And so that's my thing to watch is Tom and that trio of receivers.
Ashley, is this Tom Brady's last game in Cleveland, or will he be rolling into Cleveland at age 53 still with like four more championship rings, one in Tampa?
I mean, never say never, am I right? Like, I don't know. That guy's like, I don't know. Mary Kay knows. I have a lot of theories, though, about Gisele Bündchen and, like, you know, obviously they are divorced now. And I don't know. Without her, can he do it? I don't think so. So I'm going to go with yes, it is the last time he is going to be here. But with Gisele, if Gisele was still there, God love her, maybe that would be a this is not the last time.
See, I'm just the opposite. Like, what else does he have to do? What is Tom Brady going to do in retirement? Like, at least before it was like maybe Gisele was going to like say, Tom, you've got to stop playing football. But now it's, I don't even know. You can't do the crypto thing anymore. That's like.
There's some unexplainable things. I will say, I know, Dan, you're not a big TikTok guy, but for anyone interested, go look at the TikTok theories about this and Gisele calling her power back. And that's why, you know, some of these crazy plays have happened this season for the Bucks.
Okay. That's fair. So yeah, look, Tom Brady, this is the story this week, his last game in Cleveland. I know that's, there's probably not any real significance to that for him, but you know, for anyone who this is their last chance to see Tom Brady in person, he's one of those guys that it really does kind of live up to the hype. We were here when he came back from the suspension, back in 2016, is that right? Mm-hmm. Jacoby was on that team too. Mm-hmm. But I remember kind of staking him out down in the tunnel waiting for him to walk out. And I actually saw a video recently pop up in one of those weird like social media memories things of him and Jimmy G walking out onto the field together. So just, yeah, look, Tom Brady still got it. I think that's sort of the overarching thing, right, Mary? Mm-hmm. Like Tom Brady, age 45, this isn't 2007 when the Patriots had one of the best offenses ever, but the guy's still got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Miles and Jadeveon can do against him. They're going to need to try to get to him, get him off his mark, he at times this season hasn't necessarily trusted his protection, and he's gotten the ball rid of the ball a little bit too quickly. So are they going to be able to do that? Can they block Miles? Can Miles try to wreck the game? You know, that's what he needs to do in a game of this magnitude. If you really do believe that you have some kind of a chance to still keep this train chugging along, then he's going to have to step up and wreck the game. And can he do that? That's what will determine how Tom Brady performs.
Okay, Ashley, what do people need to know for this game?
People need to know that this is very likely the wrong game for the Browns to be thin at center. And to say they're thin right now is an understatement, but let's start with the Bucs side of things, because in the center of that defensive line, they have Vita Vea, who has 6.5 sacks this year. Now, I will say we are recording this on Wednesday. He did not practice today with a foot injury, so if he does not play, they will get a little break by not having to deal with an absolutely huge human. There is no other way to describe him at 6'4", 347. I have his PFF page, so maybe the official Bucks page has slightly higher measurements up. But he is a problem this year with getting after quarterbacks. And the Browns right now, obviously we know Ethan Posick just went on IR earlier this year. He started every game at center. He hadn't missed a snap for them until that Bills game when he got his knee injury. Nick Harris, of course, who won the starting job in theory, had been out since the first preseason game when he suffered a season-ending knee injury. Shortly after that, center Dawson Deaton, who, you know, they took a chance on in the seventh round this year, he suffered a season-ending knee injury 2 days later. So that left them to go to Yelda Froholt on Sunday, who some key mistakes for Yelda, who's done a nice job this year in different situations for the Browns. Obviously, the fumbled snap. Obviously, they did not convert on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 chances with Jacoby Brissett sneaks. And he got a huge false start call that derailed a drive towards the end of the first half. It gave Buffalo the ball back. It allowed them to take a lead. So some key mistakes in that Bills game from him. But he didn't practice on Wednesday with an illness. So who knows who is going to be playing center for the Browns this weekend. For all we know, it could be Joel Bitonio or something crazy who they have to move around the line. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I think it's the most underrated position in the game, and the Browns are just in a world of hurt right now there.
Mary Kay, you could have given me 1,000 tries to name people who would come up on this podcast, and Dawson Deaton would not have made that. I would not have thrown that name out there.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, at least he's a center, I don't know.
that's a blast from the past.
I'm impressed. But, yeah, Mary Kay, look, the center position, Ethan Pocic was playing really well. Like, one of the pleasant surprises of this season, because that was Nick Harris's job, like Ashley mentioned, and all of a sudden Ethan Pocic gets thrown in there, seemed to really fit in well. You actually kind of wondered, like, would he maybe take that job long term at this point? Now you're scrambling, and maybe the Browns get a break here. Maybe. But if they don't, they could be in trouble, because Vita Vea is having an incredible season.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's only Wednesday when we're taping this, so he's got some time to recover. But Todd Bowles was making no guarantees whatsoever that he's going to be able to play. It would be an enormous, enormous break. And no matter how you slice it, they're going to try to exploit a backup center. They're going to try to attack it now that they know that whoever is in there is either going to be new or not very experienced at the position. So that is going to be something to watch. Now, last week, they had one fumbled exchange, and it was costly. And they're going to have to really, the Browns, Jacoby and his center, they're going to have to work really hard to try not to let that happen again. Because the Browns, when they don't win the turnover battle, are 0-6, and that's just been a huge issue this season. They cannot be turning the ball over, and that is definitely something to watch.
Okay, so I'm going to go with the other quarterback in this, because, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit in the prop bets and the picks, but I don't know. This is it for Jacoby Brissett. This is his last start. Now, you know, maybe something happens and he has to start again down the road, but this is his last start this season, and we all sort of knew this was coming. He knew this was coming, but there is sort of a moment here, Mary Kay, to sort of take a step back and like Jacoby Brissett has been really good for this team. Mm-hmm. He's had his mistakes. He's thrown some interceptions. But he's certainly, for me, he's done more than I would have ever expected him to do. You know, we did a pod way back, I think after they beat Pittsburgh, and the headline was, is this sustainable from Jacoby Brissett? And that level really wasn't, but when you consider kind of where he's at and what he's done, and especially the way he played on Sunday against the Bills, the Browns can't be disappointed at all in what Jacoby Brissett has given them.
No, not at all. And I wrote a whole column about this today on Wednesday, just about how, you know, he's done more than his share of what he needed to do to hold down the fort and to get this team to where it needed to be, which was they wanted it to be relevant in the playoff scenario when Deshaun Watson came back. He did his part. The defense didn't do its part. The special teams didn't do its part. If those two units had given Jacoby Brissett the help that he needed and set him up with some good field position with some long returns, or maybe won a couple more games with some, with, you know, game-winning field goals, or if the defense could have gotten some more interceptions, some more forced fumbles, let him start some drives at midfield, right? I mean, the average field position needed to be better. Everybody needed to pitch in and rally and help him as much as they could. He did everything he needed to do. They should have at least two more victories right now. They don't because of the defense and the special teams. And it's unfortunate for him. He deserved a better supporting cast than what he got. And I think he did show enough to possibly go somewhere and start next season. There are a bunch of teams right now that have quarterback situations in a state of flux. And if Geno Smith can go out and do what he's done in Seattle, then certainly Jacoby Brissett deserves to have a starting job. And I just think he's been tremendous. And that doesn't even take into account the fact that he's a great leader. This team does not have very many great leaders. He is a great leader.
Ashley, I have thoroughly enjoyed the Jacoby Brissett experience, which is not something I was sure I was going to be saying, three, 4 months ago.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring back an old Scott Patsko line here where Jacoby Brissett might be his best argument for wins and losses not being a quarterback stat. Like, truly, because, like you guys said, I don't think we could have asked for much more from him. I get, you know, I especially get the fans' frustration because you got so much out of him and the rest of this team, you know, in a lot of ways, not, you know, with the defense and the special teams, the other phases of the game, in large part wasted it, like wasted so many opportunities. And it could very well at this point where things are at 3-7 result in another lost year for this franchise. And it just is, you know, I think so unfortunate because he did prove himself. You know, I think there are a lot of teams who are in worse quarterback situations right now that wish they had Jacoby Brissett, which I don't know that we thought we would say at certain points of this journey, but, you know, Jacoby's a charismatic guy. He's a leader. He is somebody who you understand why players respect the way you do. He's funny. He's blunt. He's all these things. And he, I think, just from a physical perspective, has done more than what the Browns even should have had to ask from him. And he's come through a lot of times.
He's been a pro, like, the whole time. And in a week when, like, you know, Zach Wilson obviously has come under fire for, you know, not taking ownership of things on Sunday. And, you know, I mentioned this on our Wednesday pod, I think it was. Dan Orlovsky was on ESPN, and I was watching while I was kind of waiting to do something the other day. And the line he had, this was regarding Zach Wilson, was when you're the quarterback and things go well, it's we. And when things go poorly, it's me. And Jacoby Brissett has really sort of embraced that. And I think that role, especially coming off of, you know, the year they just had with Baker Mayfield, this was what the Browns sort of needed, Mary Kay. The only unfortunate thing is it just didn't come with more wins.
Yeah, he was exactly what they needed. And again, when you think about him stepping up and speaking out after the Patriots game and really vowing that he was going to dig deep and do whatever he could, urging everybody else to do the same. Those are leadership qualities. But then also, and I asked JOK about this today, JOK lockers next to him. They sit next to each other, and you hear the witty banter that goes on. And he, you know, he has a really funny way of sort of teasing and ribbing JOK. And you need some of that, too. You know, you need a guy like that. He's just so easy to be with. He's also been a really good friend to Deshaun Watson. Those two guys are really close. And I think that that's sort of an unspoken, underrated situation that's been going on. Deshaun was fully on board with Jacoby being the backup, and those two guys have been there for each other. And it's a pretty tight quarterback room, and Jacoby is a huge reason for that. This has got to be bittersweet for him. He knew it was going to be time to hand it over. It's got to hurt. He's poured his heart and soul into this, and he's just been everything they could have wanted and more.
Okay, there you go. Your things to know, things you need to know for Sunday when the Browns face the Bucs. We're going to keep going here on our Browns vs. Buccaneers preview pod. Rick Stroud is coming up on the other side from the Tampa Bay Times to preview the Bucs. Then we've still got prop bets coming up. We've still got Lance Reisland's scouting report coming up. And then at the very end, our game picks. And Doug LaMaurice, even though he's swamped with Ohio State, Michigan stuff this week, he sent us his pick as well. So Mary Kay and I talked to Rick Stroud on the other side. Ashley will rejoin us after that, along with Iree Harris.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
We now welcome on Rick Stroud to give us a preview of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Rick, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Looking forward to being back in Cleveland. That sounds weird, but I actually am. It's one of my favorite ball yards and places to go.
Yeah, well, we can't wait to see you. And, of course, we cannot wait to see what Tom Brady is up to this season. So give us a little idea of just how he's been playing lately and what you are expecting from him on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, Mary Kay, he's been playing better of late, and they probably came off their most complete game since the opener when they played in Germany against Seattle. You know, it's as you know, on and off the field, it's been quite a up and down year for Tom Brady. And I think that, you know, when they had lost two games in a row in about 4 days, the last one being a Thursday night game against the Ravens, I've never seen anything like it. And especially with him, they talking to guys in New England that covered him. He sat at his locker for a good 15 minutes in full uniform with his head between his legs. And the next day, you know, his divorce was announced and final. And you could just see that there was a lot of weight on him, not on him physically, unfortunately. He's probably lost about 20 pounds. But, you know, he was really struggling, I think, emotionally off the field. And then on the field, you know, they just weren't playing well offensively. They couldn't run the football. They've had offensive line changes, and he's missed receivers, and there was just nothing really going well for them. So, you know, for them to have really one good quarter against the Rams, and he brought them back in a 2-minute situation really twice and got them in the end zone to win that game. And then I think, like I said, their most complete game, they ran the football, and that's been the thing. You know, Byron Leftwich has been under fire, but they finally got the running game going, and I think that really made all the difference.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about Tom, but since you brought up the run game, that has been the Browns' Achilles heel here throughout the season. Teams that traditionally haven't run the ball have come in and put up season highs against this team. So it sounds like Tampa is one of those teams that would be willing to just kind of run right at this defense if that's what they think they can do.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and that's really what they've been trying to do. And they got to try to build on some of that momentum, even though they've had a bye week. I think the key change has been a couple of them. One, you know, the beginning of the year, they went with a rookie from Central Michigan, Luke Getteke, who just really struggled at guard. And he was a second round pick. And we know how general managers fall in love with their draft picks. But he finally was replaced by Nick Leverett, who isn't a great all-pro guard by any shakes, but you know he's been in the league and he was better than Luke was, and that sort of helped their running game a little bit. And then the other thing, they finally gave a lot of carries to Rashad White, who's a kid from Arizona State that He's coming off a, you know, just a great game. He got 22 carries. I think he ran for over 100 yards. Had the angry run on Good Morning Football with a stiff arm that everybody saw. And I think he gives them a little bit more explosion. They're both obviously big bats. Leonard Fournette, who's nicked up right now, has a hip pointer. But those two moves sort of got the run game going, I think. And, you know, when you got a 45-year-old quarterback, man, you know, a year ago he set a career high with 719 pass attempts. And he didn't want to do that this year. And he's actually was on pace to exceed it. So they needed to find a way to get some balance in the offense and protect him. So he threw it 25 times, I think, in the last game. That's sort of where they want to be. But I'm with you. I think they're going to come in. They're going to try to run the football. People have done that against Cleveland. Slow down the pass rush. Obviously, those two edge guys are a problem. So I'd be surprised if that wasn't the game plan. I'm sure the Browns know it, too.
And, you know, as those receivers go, Tom goes. So tell us, you know, who's hot? How are the receivers doing? And, you know, who is he finding a great connection with right now?
Well, I mean, he's got his guys, right? He's got Mike Evans, who's been as consistent as any player in the league over the last nine years now. Had 1,000 yards every season. Probably will do it again. But Mike can't do it by himself. I mean, he's double-teamed a lot. Chris Godwin, you know, started the year coming off an ACL, MCL injury. And, you know, it was unrealistic to think he could be the same player. I think, and we all know it takes time for those guys to gain confidence. And so, you know, even though he was out there and he got nicked up for a little while, missed a couple of games, and it's kind of been a revolving cast at the third receiver because Julio Jones, for all the things he did in the offseason and even in the first game against Dallas, got hurt his knee, missed a lot of time. But now he's back and he's completed the last two games, which is a big deal for Julio, and had had his first touchdown over in Germany. He looked really good doing it. He ran a crossing route. He was fast. He was physical at the goal line. And so, you know, trying to find that third receiver to take the pressure and the double teams off of Godwin and Mike Evans has been key. So as long as they got those three guys on the football field, and they've got other guys too, I think that's going to be, you know, sort of what's important in the passing game going forward, because it's just too easy. Tom was not trusting protection, getting rid of the ball really fast, not letting stuff develop down the field. And so, you know, having them healthy and together is a big deal.
So you mentioned the protection, and that was one of the big stories coming into this year with Ryan Jensen getting hurt, some losses in free agency. It seems like Tom is starting to trust that protection a little more now.
Well, yeah, I guess he is. And you know, a run game will do that for you in play action. But he did not want to have another season, you know, of throwing the ball as much as he did. I mean, there is a difference. You say, well, you know, threw it 719 times at age 44. What's the big deal? But to him, it is a big deal. And losing Jensen, somebody who's right at his feet, that's the quickest path to the quarterback, obviously. That bothers any quarterback. It really bothers him. So, you know, as the season has gone on and he starts to trust more guys up front, he's staying in there a little longer. You know, he had, like I said, he was playing hot potato with the football. I mean, they had more, you know, 3 and 4 yard completions. He could complete 3 passes and they'd be punting. I mean, it was incredible how, you know, teams were playing cover 2, don't let anybody get behind you. And then there were, you know, 9 guys within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, just sitting on every underneath route. And Tom wasn't given any time or letting there be any time to develop stuff down the field. So I think he's starting to trust his protection a little bit. And that should help him, you know, try to attack a little bit more.
I've been reading over some of the defensive statistics. They look really good. So let's move over to the other side of the ball here a little bit and tell us what to expect from this defense. I think Vay might not have practiced today as we're taping this on Wednesday. He obviously, you know, leads with 6.5 sacks. But just tell us a little bit about, you know, what to expect from these defenders.
Yeah, well, if Vita Vea doesn't play, that's a big story because he's probably, or he has had his best year rushing the passer. And I think the key in these last few games, you know, for the last 2-3 years, really, Todd Bowles has had one of the top, if not the top, run defense in the league. And the reason is he's had two really, you know, big 700 pounds almost worth of defensive tackle, whether it was Ndamukong Suh and Vita, and now Akeem Hicks and Vita Vea. And Hicks missed a lot of time. But he's been back the last 2 weeks, and that's been really the best run defense they've played, because when you have those two guys inside, you know, it takes really four men or, you know, to try to protect. And that allows the edge rushers to get off. Now, they've lost Shaq Barrett, who was an elite pass rusher in this league. You can't really replace him. So that's not a good thing. But of late, they've stopped the run, and it all begins there. And then Todd, you know, will dial up all kinds of blitzes and things like that. The linebackers are among the strength of the team. You know, when Devin White is engaged the way he was in Germany, he's as good a player as there is in the league. He's been player of the month in September. He was player of the week after the Germany game. So he has elite talent. And then the other guy that's helped him against the run is Antoine Winfield Jr. Might have been their best player on defense consistently, because they moved him sort of, you know, from the safety position to kind of a nickel corner in the slot on many downs. And he's been able to, even though he's the smallest guy, he's tough as hell, and he's been able to you know, create a lot of tackles for losses, some interceptions, and really, you know, be able to cover some guys underneath. So that's sort of been the formula. And like I said, but the health of Vita Vea is a story if he's unable to play, for sure.
So obviously winning can cure a lot of things. So what are the feelings in Tampa right now, coming off the bye week, a couple wins in a row? Obviously very different, but I think everyone kind of remembers a few years ago when the Bucs came out of the bye and went on their run. What is the feeling right now around the team?
Well, it's a hell of a lot better than it was a couple of weeks ago, I can tell you that. I mean, this team was lost. They went to Pittsburgh and lost to a rookie quarterback. They went to Carolina and lost to PJ at quarterback there. So I just think that when you win, you know, and you guys know this, that games have momentum, and I think seasons have momentum, and they just couldn't establish any. They won the first two games, everything looked okay, and then they hit quite a lull there. But now they've won two in a row. It's not a good division. Everybody's beaten up on the NFC South. 5-5 is the best record right now. But still, if they were to lose to Cleveland and Atlanta wins, they're not in first place anymore. So, you know, I think they feel better about themselves, but it's only really five good quarters of football that they put together. So they need to start stacking them. But you're right. Tom Brady has always said that the best teams will start to play better after Thanksgiving. And some teams will wilt. Some teams will feel like, well, we just can't get there. So you're going to start to see in these next month and a half, 2 months, who that is. But I think they feel good about themselves, but it's a week-to-week league, as you guys know. So we'll see what happens Sunday.
Where do you think Tom Brady is right now from an emotional standpoint? I mean, do you think that, you know, he's kind of come to grips with the divorce and everything? I mean, do you feel like, you know, he's able to function better on the football field now than he was maybe a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, you know, I can't get inside his head, Mary Kay, but it just seems to me his demeanor has changed from that night when they lost to the Ravens, and the day his divorce being final. And anyone who's been through anything like that, especially when children are involved, it's very emotional for everyone, because you're kind of changing the trajectory of their lives too. It's not just you. And as public of a figure as he is, you know, a celebrity quarterback, married to a supermodel wife, you know, with respect to his family and his children, he's just a dad and a father and all of that. And so I think that weighed on him a lot. And I think that once you have a plan, at least with respect to, you know, things like custody and you know, and where they're living and where they're going to school, or how they're going to continue on going forward. And it's been very amicable that way. I just feel like he's passed all that, right? You're not making phone calls to lawyers. You're not in any kind of dispute about anything. And his demeanor has changed. Now, winning helps too. But it's a chicken and the egg thing. I really do believe that we're going to look back at this season and you know, just the way he's sort of the joy has come back to Tom Brady, I think was needed. And it seems like at least that he's in a better headspace for sure. And who wouldn't be, right, with what he's been through?
Okay, Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Rick, where can everybody find your work?
Same place as always, thetampabay.com. You can also, I have a podcast, Sports Day Tampa Bay, that we do 5 days a week. So yeah, I'm pretty much right where I've been for a while.
All right, great. We're going to take a break here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Rick, thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys. Rick.
Thanks a lot.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, thanks again to Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times for joining us here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. It is time now for props and picks. We're going to start with prop bets. Then Lance Reisland is going to offer his scouting report on the Bucks, and then we're going to make our game picks after that. So Ashley Bastock is back. Irie Harris is joining us. Let's get to it. We are recording this, as is the theme on this pod. We are recording this on Wednesday, so keep that in mind as we go through these. Some of these prop bets we're going to make up as we go. Here's a question I should have asked before I hit record, but we were busy talking about other things. Who's got a good one? Who's got a good one for us? Anybody? I mean, I don't know if it's good, but I have one. That's fine. Our standards are low here on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
So I just did this nice little story, things to know about the Bucks. And the reason I like doing those stories is because it allows me to kind of learn about the Bucks. And I'm kind of sensing patterns this season in terms of the Browns, right? And one of those patterns is that some of the best passing offenses in the league have decided to not pass against the Browns because the run defense is so bad and instead run against them. And it has worked. All of those teams I'm thinking of, Chargers, the Dolphins, sneakily the Bills, have all beat the Browns. So I am going to go with a little Leonard Fournette prop bet. He has not ran for a ton of yards this year, mainly because the Bucks have thrown the most passes of anybody in the league. Tom Brady is leading the league in passes attempted and in passes completed currently. But I'm going to go with Leonard Fournette rushing for 50 yards against the Browns. Now, keep in mind, the Bucs are also coming off their best rushing performance of the year so far. I believe they just put up like 161 yards or something like that against the Seahawks. I'll double check that while somebody else is talking. They're coming off their bye week. And I think they're going to be smart enough to, Tom's going to be able to pick them apart where he can, but they're going to try to run on the front of this defense that has not been able to stop it all year. So I think 50 is like, I don't know, it's not a lot, but I would take the over on it.
Okay, so Leonard Fournette, and just so we know as we're recording this, he was limited with a hip injury. Todd Bowles was pretty slippery talking about whether Fournette would play, but 57 yards in Germany. He's at a 63 of 56, 127 and 65 to start the year for playoff Lenny. I am going to – I guess I'm going to take the – over here because I think the Bucks will try and pound the football, but they've also been, it's been more than just Leonard Fournette as well recently. They've been using I'm actually looking it up right now live. Rashad White had 22 carries for 105 against the Seahawks. So I don't know, though. I'm with you, Ashley. I think the Bucks are going to look at this defense and say, we've got to try and run the football. Like, we just have to. Or it'll go like the Bills game where they might come out and try to throw, and if it doesn't work, they'll just say, okay, we're done with this. We're going to start running. We're going to test this run defense. So yeah. I definitely could see Lenny going over 50 in this game. A big, powerful back, Mary Kay.
Yeah, you know what? I think so, too. 50 just doesn't even sound like that much to me. When you've got two backs who weren't doing much last week, each getting 86 yards, of course, some of it will be dependent on how the game goes and can you – sustain the run, but if they get ahead, then they're going to be able to run. And I just think that that 50 just it's not too much to ask for a you know, for a defense that's really, really been struggling. As we know, they've surrendered 160 yards or more on five occasions out of their last seven games, all losses. So, you know, I really think that Todd Bowles, who's really good, a really good mind just in terms of being a head coach, is going to know what to do here. He's going to try to cram it down their throats until they prove they can stop it. So they made some changes last week. You know, Sione Takitaki is now basically the middle linebacker. And JOK is back, and I thought he had a pretty good game. But I still think that Leonard can get 50-plus.
Irie, what do you think? Leonard Fournette over 50? Are you going with us or against us here?
I am going with y'all because, and also I think you're being a little too generous just keeping it at 50. You know, this is a unit that where Austin Ekeler had more yards again in a single game compared to the first four games combined in the season. They allowed Jeff Wilson Jr., who wasn't even a Dolphin, for 2 weeks to go off for 100-plus rushing yards. I think 50 is too generous of a number, and that's why I'm going to go over with that, because not only are we losing confidence in this run defense, but they're losing confidence in their own run defense. Grady Williams was speaking, you know, after the game. He even said himself, our run defense is overexposed, and all the opposing teams know it, so that's what they're going to go at. So definitely they're going to take a shot at the run defense and say, you know what, they haven't been able to stop it all this year. Let's see how far we can break this down and open up opportunities, you know, for the scoring. So I'm going on with this for 50.
Ashley, did you take the over on this?
I did take the over on this. And no, to Irie's point, I did think about setting this higher, but knowing he is limited with the hip injury, I'm like, he did practice today, which is, I think, you know, trending in a positive direction towards him playing. Like you said, Dan, they're being a bit elusive on what his status is going to be, and understandable since it's earlier in the week. But yeah, he just hasn't really had like a ton of those games, and they don't run it a lot. So that's kind of why I set it where I did. And I think he's got a nice mix of games over and under that.
I thought it was very interesting to hear multiple Browns defenders today. We heard from Takitaki and we heard from Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I thought it was very interesting to hear them basically admit the Bucs are going to watch the film of our defense and they're going to run at us. They're going to run the football. So the Browns are expecting it. And of course, the issue there is if the Browns kind of sell out to stop the run, this is not a quarterback that you want to overexpose your pass defense to as well. Okay, Mary Kay, you said you had one, right?
Yeah, again, you know, I don't know how good it is, but but I've just been thinking about Amari Cooper. I mean, Amari's so good, and he's just been one of the bright spots for the Browns this season. And when you really watch the catches that he has made, I mean, my goodness, he's a good receiver. You can easily see why he is a Pro Bowl, four-time Pro Bowl receiver. I actually think that he has Hall of Fame talent. And if he were able to string together about three or four more Pro Bowls, I think that there could come a day where, if I'm still at it, I could be sitting in that room voting on him for the Hall of Fame. I just think that's how good he is when he goes up to catch the football and comes down with it. He just makes spectacular catches. So I am going with an over under for Amari Cooper this game of 80 yards. Now, did you have him pulled up there real quick, Dan?
I did. Yes, I've got him.
Okay, so how many times has he done that this season?
Four times.
Four times he has gone over 80 yards this season. So four out of the 10 games that they have played, he's done that. Now, this is a good defense that they're playing. It is a good defense. They're going to get their pressure. They're going to do some really good things. Todd knows how to coach some defense. But I still think Amari, especially with David back, they have to account for him. They've got to account for Donovan Peoples-Jones. And as Amari always says, you know, I'm not just a good route runner. I can make that contested catch, and he's proven that. So Amari, 80, over and under on that. I want to hear what you guys think first.
Well, Irie might not believe me, but I do listen to Irie sometimes. Every now and again, I pay attention when he talks. And one of the points he made last week, when he was talking about his Amari Cooper bet, was the Browns kind of 1 week forget about Amari, and then the next week they go hard after Amari. And this last week against Buffalo, they definitely did not forget about Amari Cooper. He had 8 catches, 113 yards, the 2 touchdowns. But if we're going to kind of follow this pattern of like every other week, I think I'm going to take the under on 80 yards. Now, the only thing that kind of gives me pause, though, is this is Jacoby's last game as the starter. So maybe these guys want to send Jacoby out on a with a bang. And like, you know, Jacoby looks to Amari constantly. Like every throw seems to go Amari Cooper's direction, it seems. So there's certainly a scenario where Amari just where this offense just goes crazy because they love Jacoby Brissett and they want to send him out with a win. Still going to take the under, though. See, Irie, I listen to you. I pay attention.
Thank you, Dan. That is very sweet of you. You inspired me. I hope to one day acquire the exaggerated swagger you walk into the facility with every day.
Is that what it's called?
Oh, no. Dan, I don't know that anyone has ever associated swagger with you.
Yeah, first time. First time. When not asking me about the
dog. Swagger Jr., the living, breathing Browns mascot. Yeah. No, Dan, you actually stole my point while you were talking, so I'm kind of upset now. I was thinking that I'm going to take the over because of that fact. Like, it is Jacoby Brissett's last start. I think Amari Cooper is far and away his favorite guy to look for downfield. I just have this feeling that Jacoby is, we're going to get another good game out of him, knowing how much this opportunity has meant to him, starting has meant to him. And I think in order for him to do that, he is going to have to look to Amari Cooper. Now, there is the point, like we said, of this pattern that they have had. But I'm kind of banking on this being like weeks 2 and 3, when against the Jets and the Steelers, he got targeted 10 and 11 times. Or weeks 5 and 6, where against the Chargers and the Patriots, he got targeted 12 times. Now, he didn't make as many catches in those games, but there have been games where he's gone back-to-back double-digit targets. So I'm thinking maybe we're going to see that again. And Jacoby is going to look to old reliable for his last start, his last chance to, you know, prove league-wide that he can be an NFL starter and get wins now on top of having, you know, some solid individual stats. So I'm going to take the over on this and go with Mary Kay's over.
I am going to go with the over, not only because Mary Kay said it and because everybody agreed, but also because it is Brissett's last start. And also, when you think about just the whole, I don't even want to compare regarding hospital, Ben said that the season is all life support because it's almost dead at this point, respectfully. But when it comes to Stefanski, it seems as if he's losing a little bit of patience and he's just trying to go to whatever, you know, works and is reliable instead of pulling a bunny out of a hat. You know, I use the example of the back-to-back QB sneaks with Brissett. That's been something that's been well all season long. So that in the midst of that moment, he just goes back to back with that. And now at this point, we're going into Brissett's last start right before Watson. He's going to get a set of keeping guys warm and keeping guys within tempo and motion so that they're not just all of a sudden expected to be great once Watson goes back, but they're already within that flow. And what better time to do it than the game right before Watson comes along? And yeah, banking up along the fact that for once since weeks 2 and 3 that he goes over 80 yards and back-to-back weeks. And Brissett will definitely be looking for Cooper in this game.
Okay, so Mary Kay, you've heard it. 2 overs, 1 under.
You know, I think I'm going to go over, not a lot over, but maybe just a little over, you know, 82 yards or something. You know, I just feel like if you want to be winning games and you are the Cleveland Browns, you have to be getting Amari Cooper involved early and often. You have to be hitting him on those downfield shots, and he's got to be scoring touchdowns. And so I'm going to go over. I think Jacoby knows where his bread is buttered a little bit, and it's on Coop.
Okay, there we go. So I am in the minority here, taking the under. Sorry, Amari. I apologize. I always feel bad when I'm like the only one that takes the under. Irie, what do you have?
All right, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of thinking a little too much when it came to certain players and yards or tackles or sacks. I'm like, you know what? let's go to something that I actually haven't done all season, change it up quite a bit. Let's see if this gets dug crazy or not. I'm going to go with total team points. Right now, DraftKings has it at a, for the Browns, the over under, the midline is 19.5 points. I'm going to go with the over. I know we're going to give later on, we're going to our game picks and what the game, how the game will be and whatnot, but I just don't see this as a total fluid, you know, game offensively, somewhere more on the ugly side, but still within the sense that the Browns will be gritty enough to put some points on the board. There's only been, I believe, twice this season where they've finished a game with under 20 points. And on top of that, you have the sense of, like, you know, they know what type of offense they're going up against. They know who they're going. They know the quarterback that they're going up against. So it's a sense of keeping the ball away from long enough, but still being able to put points up on the board, along with the fact that they are, I believe, at the moment, they're top 10 in the league for points per game with 24 a game. So even as many losses that we've spoken on with them, there's no doubt that they've been able to put points up on the board. And I don't think that should change when playing against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think Tampa's defense is really good. And Todd Bowles, like you mentioned it, Mary Kay, he's a really good defensive coach. But this Browns offense has been pretty efficient, and they've scored some points. Like Irene mentioned, they've only gone under 20 points twice. That was at Miami and against New England. But even against Buffalo, now there was some garbage time in there, but they did get to 23 eventually. So, Irene, what was the number?
At the moment, it is 19.5, and I checked again, and DraftKings didn't change up on me. Good job, DraftKings. So you have 19.5.
I think they score at least 20. Yeah, if it would have been like 22 or something, I might have thought about the under, but I think this team will score 20 points. So I'll take the over here.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over as well. You know, the Browns are going to be at home. It's Jacoby's last start. I think he's going to leave it all out on the field. I think they're going to take some shots. I think they're going to take some risks. I think they're probably going to be able to run the ball better than they did last week. Now, part of that will be dependent on if Vita Vey is going to be able to play, because he did not practice today. He has a foot injury. He leads them with 6.5 sacks. He's amazing. So I think that will have an impact on the game. But I still think that the Browns are going to be able to score more than 20 points. I think the weather is supposed to be pretty good.
I think so, yeah.
Right? So I think, you know, that will have an impact. I'm going to go with a slight over.
Ashley, any disagreement here?
No, I think I'm gonna jump on the bandwagon here as well for similar things. And I'm kind of thinking, like, if I think Amari Cooper is going to have a big game, I think they're going to be able to get surpass at least 19.5 points. Well, get to 20 points, whatever. So yeah, nothing to add. I think you guys all make great points.
Okay, I'm going to be really boring here, but I'm on a hot streak because I hit this last week. I took the Browns plus 3. Was it in the first quarter? It had to be the first quarter because they were trailing at halftime. I took the Browns plus 3 in the first quarter. I'm doing it again, and this time it's only plus 1. I'm taking the Browns plus 1 in the first quarter because, as we've seen over and over and over again, this team loves the first 15. So much so that Amari Cooper on Sunday afternoon said, maybe we should do a first 30. Or just repeat the first 15. So this team loves the first 15. They're going to come out. I have no idea how Tampa does on their opening drives. I don't care. Browns plus 1 in the first quarter. They'll probably take a 7-0 lead again like they always do, and then we'll see what happens from there. You know, Mary Kay, it used to be like the Browns would have a great drive early, and I'd be like, uh-oh, I picked them to lose this game. I think I'm going to be wrong. And now it's like they have a great drive early, and I'm just a complete cynic about it. I'm like, all right, let's see. There's still, you know, 2.5 hours left of football. I mean, this team can still start fast even against a good defense, right?
Yeah. Yes, they can still start fast. They've got the script down, and they definitely can do that. You know, I suppose it depends on whether or not – part of it, I think, is going to depend on whether or not they – get the ball first. But when they do, they've got that down. I mean, they've got it down. So I think I can agree with you on this, that that they can be plus one after the first quarter. You did a good job on that last week. You were right about that. And they do have starting figured out. They don't have finishing figured out, but they've got starting figured out. So I'm with you on that.
I mean, Ashley, they were out there converting third and 11s on that opening drive. Jacoby scrambled, and then he hit Amari Cooper on another one. It's like a completely different offense in those first couple drives.
It is, again, that's why, you know, Amari Cooper joked, like you said, after the game of, oh, maybe we should script the first 30 plays. And it's like, I know that was kind of like, you know, an off-the-cuff joke, but like, no, maybe, like, can they script the first 30 plays? Because it is a night and day difference. You know, I did Sports for Klee today. There were multiple voicemails about why do the Browns look so good on script or for the first, like, drive of the game, and then after that they don't. It's like, well, because it's script, and they don't look so good off the script. And we ask them every week why that is, players and Kevin Stefanski, and no one has an answer. I think if they did have an answer, that wouldn't be the case. But yeah, it's definitely the hot part of the game for them is the first quarter. So Dan, this may be a boring bet, but it might be a safe bet, and sometimes that's the bet to take. I don't know, could be easy money here.
I mean, I read there's no such thing as a gimme, but this is a gimme.
Yes, Dan, it is. And as you listen to me, I listen to you as well. That was a terrific choice of bet last week, and I'm going to ride along with it for this week. I mean, they're probably not that anybody I would think calculates it, or maybe they do. We just got to go out and find out, but this Browns team is amongst the best when it comes to opening script, when it comes to scripting their first 7 to 12 plays in the first series of really the first quarter, first 10 minutes of the game. And it just kind of pains me because you just wish that they would have this mindset or even try to, you know, copy it when in a sense for the rest of the game. But nope, we're going to go and set the tone and establish the pass before the run and get points up on a board and bring everybody's hopes up once again. So I'm going to go along with this and within them being good at opening script and being plus one.
All right, there we go. Our prop bets for Sunday's game between the Browns and Bucks. We're going to have our picks coming up after the break. And yes, Doug LaMaurice, who is swamped with Ohio State, Michigan content creation this week. He is obviously not here on this podcast, but he did take the time, as you would expect, to send me his pick. You can probably guess who he picked in this game, but I will actually tell you who he picked on the other side. But first, we bring on Lance Reisland to give us his scouting report on the Buccaneers. Lance, how are you?
Hey, Dan, how are you, bud?
Oh, I'm doing well. Let's get right to it. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, let's just start with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Called him the elephant in the room. Tom Brady. Maybe the greatest to ever do it, certainly the greatest winner at the position. What are you seeing from him at age 45?
Well, they won two in a row, and he's kind of getting – looks like they're kind of getting in a groove a little bit. You know, the training camp was a little bit off for those guys, so I think they're kind of getting in the rhythm. You know, the thing that really has always impressed me with Brady is his ability to check the ball down. And with the Browns playing so much zone, kind of plays into his strength, which is something I've kind of watched over the last couple hours in terms of he checks the ball down and gets rid of the ball so quick, it's going to be hard for the Browns to get pressure unless they bring it up in A and B gap. But, yeah, he's starting to hit his stride for sure.
So when you look at that protection and when you look at pressure, obviously that was an issue coming into the year. They lost Ryan Jensen. They lost some guys to free agent to free agency. Does it look like their line has maybe solidified a little bit or that maybe he trusts it a little more?
Yeah, they've gotten a lot better. They were pretty good in their win, in their last two wins for sure. Love Tristan Wirfs. I loved him coming out of the draft, but they're all kind of on the same page now. They're also doing some, they're bringing extra linemen in that Josh Wells comes in at 72 at tight end, so they'll max protect with him as well. But his ability to get rid of the ball, I think he's starting to get into his own rhythm. So, he's very good at recognizing what he's seeing and getting rid of the ball. And then he's great in the pocket. He's not, obviously he's not a runner, but his ability to make that first guy miss and find a hole in the pocket is second to none. And he's starting to do that really well right now.
So let's talk a little bit about their weapons. I guess it probably starts with Mike Evans, right?
Well, yeah, you know, they got Godwin, Evans, and Julio Jones, and all of them, you know, Godwin last week had 6, Evans had 5, and Julio had 3 with a big touchdown. So they're, and then they got Leonard Fournette at running back, and then Rashad White had a big game. He had 22 carries for 105 yards. But when you talk about Fournette, Godwin, Evans, Jones, just like veteran guys who are still very good, their ability to get open, they do, like I said, they kind of, they're all on the same page now. So when they get in rhythm, it makes it very tough because Brady knows where they're going to be. And Julio Jones seems to be kind of coming into his own, kind of understanding his role and being really good in it. So yeah, they have a lot of guys who are older, but they're still really playing at a high level.
Who do you think is the scariest guy of that group, especially among the pass catchers?
It's Evans for me because he's because of his size and his ability to separate, and he can run the whole route tree, so he can match up. They can put him in the slot. He can get on a safety. He can run the under routes. He can run the option routes. Obviously, he's fantastic in the red zone, like I said. So for me, it's Evans. I think Godwin has always had before he got his knee hurt last year, a couple years ago, he was really, really good. So he seems to be getting back into shape. But if you had to ask me, and then Julio Jones is just he's just an incredible athlete. So he's always scary. But the consistency where I think Brady likes to go would be Evans for sure.
OK, so bad news for Browns fans and this Browns defense. Probably we had Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times on a little bit earlier, and we saw this in Germany. This team is starting to run the football now. They're a team that has thrown the ball a lot all year, but they're starting to turn to that run game. And a couple Browns defenders even admitted it today. They're going to watch the film of this defense, and they're probably going to keep trying to run the football.
Well, yeah, and you're going to have to. I mean, you said it a couple weeks ago. I mean, we're more than halfway through the season, so the Browns are who they are defensively, and they're going to have to change it up in terms of getting people in the box and kind of do what teams are doing to them in terms of not waiting, not anticipating. I don't think they can hold up. I don't think those defensive tackles can hold up in base. Just being a forefront with those backers playing at 4 yards, they're going to have to press the issue. They're going to have to play more man coverage. They're going to have to get Delpit, who I really like when he's down in the box anyway. They're going to have to get him down by the line of scrimmage. They're going to have to help those defensive linemen and those linebackers. They're going to have to crowd the line of scrimmage and press the issue for sure.
Okay, I want to ask you about two defenders specifically, and let's start with Vita Vea, big guy in the middle. Now, he has a foot injury. We're recording this on Wednesday. He did not practice on Wednesday. Todd Bowles indicated he's not sure if Vita Vea is going to play. If he plays, how big of a problem is he?
Well, he's a big problem because they like to play that odd front. So he's going to be lined up over the center, and it seems like the Browns are having some issues at center as well with injury. So he's like you said, he's all of 340, all 350. So he's a load in there. I think they're going to go, being that they're an odd front, they like to play an odd front. I can see them playing that tight front or that double eagle like the Dolphins did and kind of taking away those double teams from the Browns and making those guards in that center block one-on-one in their gap and their zone schemes. He's a load, but they're all, you know, Akeem Hicks is, I loved him when he was with the Bears. He's a big, huge guy. That Joe Tryon Shokinwa, I'm not sure how you say his last name. He's long and athletic. So he runs sideline to sideline. And then obviously Devin White and Levante David are really good inside. White's just fantastic on film.
And then the other guy, Antoine Winfield Jr., a guy that obviously folks from this area know very well. A guy that went a pick after Grant Delpit maybe stings just a little bit for Browns fans, but he's been so good, really, just going back to his rookie year. And, you know, Rick was telling us earlier that they're actually using him at times as sort of a big nickel now and again. What are you seeing out of Winfield?
Well, you can definitely use him a big nickel. He's a great tackler. He's a big guy, strong. He is really good at recognizing. He is a film watcher. There is no question about it, because he is very good at recognizing what he's seeing on down and distance, what the formation is, the strength of the formation, who he has to help on. He does a great job of keeping things in front of him. But his route recognition and his ability to understand what the offense is trying to do based on the down and distance is very impressive. And he's very physical. He gets involved in the run game. He's definitely a leader back there. And I like that Mike Edwards, too. Mike Edwards, to me, is a Grant Delpit guy. There's some vulnerabilities in coverage with him, but he likes to tackle. He likes to come off the edge. But Winfield is definitely he's the overall leader of that secondary for sure.
I've got to say, when I hear you talk about this defense, and Todd Bowles, of course, you know, a really great defensive coordinator. I actually really liked what he did as a head coach in New York, considering mm-hmm. that situation. But obviously a great defensive coordinator as well, coaching the Bucks now. It sounds like you really like this defense.
Oh, I do. And I think once again, they're a veteran guy. So sometimes those veteran teams take a while to get going. And like, you know, it's a long season, 17 games. So I feel like they're kind of getting into their, kind of their groove. But for me, Devin White is he's the ringleader. So you have Winfield in the back, you have Vita Vea up front, and then you got David and White, inside, especially with White. So they're really good at all three levels. They got a vocal guy at all three levels, a guy that communicates at all three levels, guys that are consistent at all three levels. They play very well with each other. They have great run fits. Very rarely do you see gaping holes with them. Those big guys inside, I've said it before, they take on blockers and they let White and David run free all the time.
Okay, so here we go. Time to make your pick for Sunday, Browns and Bucks at First Energy Stadium.
Well, for me, it starts with the inability for the Browns to stop the run. They have to stop the run. If they do that, you know, maybe the game will be different. Buccaneers are in an odd front. I want to see the Browns be able to block an odd front that was tough for them against the Dolphins. I said earlier in the podcast, the Browns play a lot of zone, and if they play their zone and they get too deep in their drops, Brady will nickel and dime them all the way down the field. So I want to make sure, you want to make sure that they can, kind of stay connected and not give up those easy 4 and 7 and 8 yards. He gets rid of the ball so quickly. So unless they do something with Garrett in terms of bringing him A or B gap, it's going to really be hard to get pressure. I think the Browns will play well. I think the weather actually helps Tampa Bay. It doesn't seem like it's going to be too cold. I just don't think they're going to be able to stop the run. And I think Tom Brady's getting into his groove, but I think it's going to be a close game. I got the Buccaneers 23-20.
Okay, there we go. Lance Reisland, his scouting report on the Buccaneers. You can read his work at cleveland.com/Browns, of course, as well. We're going to take a break here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. And then on the other side, we're going to make our picks as well. Lance, thanks for the time.
As always, Dan, thank you.
And we are back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Thanks, Lance Reisland, as always, for that scouting report. Let's do it. It's time to make our picks for this week. The Browns and Buccaneers, First Energy Stadium. Really a gigantic game for both teams. The Browns, not technically a must-win. I'm sitting next to Mary Kay, so I have to say this. Maybe I need to whisper this. It's a must-win, most likely, for the Browns. The Bucs fighting in the really just brutal NFC South, just full of bad teams. They are trying to win that division, which, it's there for the taking if they can string together some wins. So time to make our picks for this game. Let's see here. We're going to start with – I'm going to save Doug. We're going to start with Irie.
Ah, God. All right. I get to start it off. Wonderful. I was kind of saying going back and forth with this, actually, because – amongst the previous couple of matchups to where, I could get banned for saying the Browns on this pod. This is slightly more than an even match than people, I think, would believe. And so because of that, I'm going to choose the Browns. This is not a sense of me getting my hopes up. This is not a sense of me thinking that this is a turning point. This is just a sense of going out with a bang for Jacoby Brissett, the quarterback who multiple times has been brought in, to be the starting quarterback for a team after a weird, interesting situation from footballs deflating to a quarterback retiring 2 weeks before the season to this. So I see why not with him going out with the bang, having a nice game, this unit going back to their strong suits that relate to Brissett, not trying to do anything completely different, along with them being at home and stuff, maybe that can bring their energy and hopes up a bit. And I do see this game being a bit more, not like I said earlier, not that big of a fluid game within the offense, more so on the ugly side, but still gritty enough to where both teams get within the 20s. And that's why my final score is going to be 23, Browns and the Bucks 20.
Okay, so 23-20 Browns. Just so everyone knows, I forgot to mention this off the top, the Browns are underdogs. They're home underdogs. The Bucks are favored by 3.5. The total on this, and again, this is all as of Wednesday, about 6 o'clock. The total on this game is 43. So, Irie, you've got it hitting right on that total. And, of course, you're picking the Browns to win. Ashley, what are you picking?
So it's funny because my score is almost identical to Irie's. However, I just keep thinking the way this defense is, for as much as I totally agree with all the intangibles that Irie said, you know, about it being Jacoby Brissett's last game, that would probably be the one reason I would pick it. But I just keep thinking of, like, the football tangibles. Like, the Bucs have won their last two games. They're coming in off a bye week. Tom Brady is a quarterback that can just pick this defense apart, I think. The Browns at center, who knows who's going to be the Browns center at this point. They might get helped, you know, by the fact that Vita V didn't practice. But if he does play on Sunday, this is the wrong game to not have your starting center, because he is huge and is going to be a problem and has 6.5 sacks, like Mary Kay said. Everything tangible is telling me the Bucs are going to win this game, like stats wise. So that's what I'm going to pick, 24-20. So just at the over, right, Dan? And yep, right around that 3.5 the Bucs are favored by. But yeah, I can't do it. You know, the Browns are just in such a rut right now, and maybe this is one of those weird games. We, you know, I always joke, I never know what's going to happen. I've been bad at picking games this year. But I just am leaning towards Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah. So that's Tampa to cover. That's just slight over there for Ashley.
Respect.
Again, I'm on a hot streak here. I got my second game right against the spread last week against Buffalo. So I'm like 2-7-1. Does that even add up?
Good job, Dan. I didn't notice that. Good for you.
Yeah, it's been bad. It's been very, very bad for me picking games for the Browns against the spread.
Proud of you, bro.
So I think I'm sort of in the same camp as Ashley on this. I think there are things there that tell me, yes, I could see the Browns winning this game. First of all, I don't want to overrate the Bucs. They are still a 5-5 football team, right? They, you know, we had Rick Stroud on earlier, and he basically said they've played 5 good quarters at this point. And just those 5 quarters have been all in a row here leading into this game. So this isn't like the Super Bowl champion Bucs of 2020 or even the team last year that was really good. So I don't want to overrate them. But and I do think there's something to the idea of these guys really like Jacoby Brissett, and there's going to be an emotional pull there. There's going to be this desire to want to go win a game, you know, send Jacoby out on a high note. But I just can't get past the idea that even Browns defenders are saying it. Like I said earlier, teams are just going to test this run defense over and over and over again until they prove they can stop it. And Tom Brady is still really good, and he's going to be able to recognize things at the line. He's going to be able to change into runs. They're going to just have called runs. I just don't trust this run defense. My instinct initially this week was to pick the Buccaneers, so I'm going to stick with that. Said the Browns would get over that 19.5. I don't want to land in the same spot as Ashley and Irie, I guess, so I'll go a little bit higher, but neither of these offenses are particularly high scoring. But I think it's going to be a close game. I'm going to say I am going to land sort of right in that spot. I'm going to say 23-21 Tampa in this game. So the Browns cover, but the Bucs win. And I think that's the over, if my math is correct. So yeah, I'll take a slight over as well. Mary Kay, do you want me to read Doug's first, or do you want to
Go ahead, read Doug's.
All right, Doug is thinking the same thing as Ashley and me. His pick is Tampa 26 and the Browns 21, noting that 26 would be Tampa's second highest point total of the season. So there you go. There's Doug's pick. All right, Mary Kay, you're up.
That's interesting because I wrote down here 26-21.
It's true. Can confirm.
As my score. But wow. I'll change it. I'll change it up and go. I'm going to pick the Bucs. I'm going to pick the Bucs just because, you know, it's like, once again, it's Tom Brady. It's Tom Brady, and I'm so old school with Tom Brady. I still think of him as being 30 years old and not 45. You know, I still think of him as being invincible. And the last game that I watched him play, you know, he did some really cool things once again. And I just feel like he's going to come here and he's going to be the Tom that I remember. And I was asking Rick Stroud about him and where his mental state is. And he said he's in a good place emotionally after going through this divorce. He thinks he's gotten it back together and he thinks he's, you know, he's himself again and he's confident. And when you think about the receivers that they have, I mean, when you just say the names, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and Julio Jones, right? We don't know if Greg Newsom is going to be back yet from his concussion. And, you know, I think that that could be also somewhat of a factor. I've got the Bucs winning this one 27-23, covering and winning.
Okay, a lot of Bucs love.
Can I, here. Dan, can go I just ahead, say Ash. Something too, really, like that played into me picking the Bucs? And again, maybe on Friday when we're doing our video and stuff, I'll change my pick if something happens injury-wise. But I just kept thinking, like, obviously Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are so intertwined in a lot of people's minds, including mine. And that Patriots game, it was very similar. Like, there was a lot of things telling me, hey, the Patriots and Belichick are probably going to take advantage of this. But I kind of went with, I don't know, maybe the Browns are the better team. They have a, you know, Bailey Zappe playing quarterback. But, like, those instincts were those that gut feeling or whatever, I should have listened to it then. So that's why I'm listening to it now. And I think just the mentality, just two very similar guys who are intertwined in my mind. So I'm not willing to make the same mistake I did when they played the Patriots.
And, like, you know, even though I said I don't want to overrate the Bucs, I don't want to pretend this is like the Bucs from the Super Bowl year, Tom Brady is still really good. Mm-hmm. Like, he's, you know, this isn't like Peyton Manning his last year in Denver or Ben his last year in Pittsburgh. I mean, Tom Brady can still play. And I've said it before on this pod. Rick said it earlier. Tom Brady knows this is it. This is the time. Like Thanksgiving, this is when you got to get it together. And a few years ago, the Bucs came out of their late bye week. And they turned it on. And that's the other part of this, too, is the Bucs coming off a bye and Tom Brady coming off a bye, I think, will be more effective than the Browns have been coming off of their bye. So the only case I could make for the Browns was the emotional. And this is obviously assuming Vita Vea plays, because he does change things in the run game a lot. But the only case I could make was the emotional one. And I guess I'm just not willing to put enough weight behind that. In this particular game. Okay, that'll do it. Our Orange and Brown Talk Browns Bucks preview pod. Thanks to Rick Stroud for joining us earlier to tell us all about the Buccaneers. Thanks to Lance Reisland for his scouting report. Thanks to Doug for texting in his pick. For Mary Kay, Ashley, and Irie, I'm Dan. Thanks to all of you for listening.